Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the RHO Podcast. Coming at you after a bit of a hiatus this week. We kind of usually take some time in the middle of the summer when it's super hot, not a lot of people are thinking about hunting stuff, and we just kind of reset and refresh, get some new ideas, start trying to work on some new guests for you guys and things like that. Working on deer heads, obviously, for me, busy time of year, middle of the summer for that. So trying to get some of those done and finished up, ready to go out the door. But it's getting down to almost August here, recording this on July 28th, so we're just a few days away from August, which is when usually people start thinking about hunting again. I know that's kind of when I really start to get after it as far as getting stuff around and ready, really shooting the bow. Fall food plots, of course, got to take care of all that stuff. And we're going to get into all that as we move forward here. Full draw riders are going to come back at you soon too. And we'll be getting into all that kind of stuff. But before we do, there's something pretty important here in Illinois that's been going on. You guys may not have heard about it, depending on who you follow on social media or what pages you're on. But it's this Illinois rewilding effort, and it's a part of House Bill 2726. If you guys have heard of it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, rewilding is kind of a broad term. So before I get into too much of it, I'll give you kind of the summary of the bill. And this is from the Illinois government's website, actually. This bill amends the Department of Natural Resources Conservation Law of the Civil Administrative Code of Illinois. It provides that the Department of Natural Resources has the power to exercise all rights, powers, and duties conferred by law and to take measures that are necessary for the implementation of rewilding as a conservation strategy in the state, including but not limited to the restoration of land to its natural state, whatever that means, the reintroduction of native species, particularly apex predators and keystone species, and the restoration of ecological processes as defined by state-specific baselines. So if you guys, really the key part of that is at the end there. It gives the state the power to reintroduce native species, particularly apex predators and keystone species. That's what I'm really going to focus on this episode, because those are things that are going to have a lot of impact on everybody in the state, whether you're a hunter or not, or you just enjoy the outdoors, or you just like to have your kids playing in the backyard and not really have to worry about them. That's going to affect everybody when it comes to that. And a keystone species is essentially a species that has a drastic effect on its surroundings despite the population size. So think of like a beaver. One beaver takes down a whole bunch of trees, right? That one beaver has a huge impact around him despite just being one beaver. That would be an example of a keystone species in Illinois. So that could also stem to, no pun intended, to plants and stuff like that. You could get into that area. And some of this obviously is going to have to do with that. It's not all going to be animals or wildlife. They're going to do some stuff with plants and things of that nature as well. But I'm going to focus on what I think is going to have the biggest impact on everybody throughout the state and their really everyday lives at some point. So again, what that bill means, the IDNR has unmitigated power to reintroduce species to the state. And those species, the ones I want to focus on, include black bears, wolves, and mountain lions. Apex predators is exactly what it says there. Those are the three big ones that you could see reintroduced into Illinois. Different parts of Illinois, of course, not everywhere is going to be able to sustain them, But us in Southern Illinois, we could pretty much sustain all of those, depending on where you're at in the state. And if they're in one part of the state, they're going to be in the next. Look at the black bears that we've had come through the state. Look at the mountain lions that have been on trail cameras and stuff. It's very obvious that just because they're not already here, living here all the time, they're still in this area. So if you introduce them to two counties, they're going to be in four before you know it, 8, 16, 32, up from there. I mean, they're just going to spread. It's not like you can put them in a big fence. So those are the species I'm going to focus on, black bears, wolves, and mountain lions, because I think they're going to have the biggest effect. And you might be thinking, oh, well, that's cool. We'll have a few wolves here and there. We'll have some mountain lions, get pictures of them on trail cameras. We might see one every now and then. Black bears, they don't really hurt anybody. That'd be pretty cool to have around. But you got to think about the adverse effects of that, too, and how does that affect us? So the apex predator reintroduction could have detrimental impacts on multiple species in the state. Basically, anything that you like to hunt, whether that's rabbits, squirrels, turkey, or deer, all three of those, especially wolves and mountain lions, could decimate those populations. I know in a lot of places we have a lot of deer. In some places we don't. In some places we have a ton of turkeys. In other places we don't. If this happens, all of those places that have a bunch of them now are going to be just like the other ones. Because that's where do you think those wolves and mountain lions are going to go? They're not going to go where there's 5 deer. They're going to go where there's 50 deer. And then, I mean, ultimately, that's probably what the state and DNR wants. I mean, we've seen that trying to get rid of the deer herd already. I don't know that they're thinking about, you know, the rabbits and squirrels and birds and everything else that's out there, too, that they're going to kill, because those predators don't care what it is. They're just looking to kill. Sometimes mountain lions and wolves, they don't even kill to eat it. They just kill out of sport. They'll kill them and leave them behind. There's been plenty of cases of that with wolves out west, and I'm going to get into a little bit of that here later in this episode. But just look at the impact that bobcats, coyotes, and raccoons have already had on different species, especially looking at turkeys. The bobcat reintroduction, or I don't know, reintroduction, but the efforts to improve their numbers and the lack of value on the raccoons anymore, so less people hunting them and taking care of them, and combine that with the habitat that just isn't there for them anymore, the turkey population in a lot of places is just almost gone. And rabbits are the same way. I mean, there's a lot of places that used to be just lousy with rabbits. You can go run dogs and hunt them and have a great time or whatever. But now there's places where you'd be lucky to see a couple rabbits. Same way with turkeys. And that's just from bobcats and coyotes and raccoons. Now add wolves and mountain lions into that mix and think about what's going to happen there, because we can hunt a few bobcats. I'm going to talk about that too. We can hunt coyotes pretty much anytime, anywhere, with whatever. And we can trap and shoot raccoons. But we're not going to be able to do that with mountain lions and wolves for a while, probably. They're not going to just let us start shooting them legally. And not only are they going to decimate populations of wild animals, like all those I talked about, the huntable species, but livestock is in danger too. Livestock, pets, unfortunately, children and grandchildren. You think about your kids playing in the backyard. Do you really want to be worried about a mountain lion cruising through there and thinking that's an easy meal? Because that's something that really could happen. Think about even in urban areas, how many deer do you have in your backyard? If you live in a city right now or a suburb, how many deer do you see moving through your town in your backyard? I live in Wayne City, small town, but more of a just small town setting, you know. Well, I've got neighbors on both sides of me across the road. We've got a field in the backyard, but I've got deer that come in and eat out of my garden fairly regular, right? The mountain lions aren't going to stop just because there's houses around. Same way with the wolves. Do you really want those in your backyard? So even if you're not looking at those huntable species I talked about, think about that. But again, even if that's not what you're worried about, if you got livestock, if you know people who have livestock, if you like to eat beef for that matter, that's going to be a big one. Just look at what's happened in Colorado already with the wolves out there. Ask anybody in Colorado, especially ranchers, if they like what's happening with that. And I think you'll get a taste of it. There's a quote from an article here from a rancher out in Colorado. It says, they never told us what pack we got, just that initially we will have conflicts. He said, well, we found out later they dropped off the Copper Creek pack, and these wolves have been chewing on, chasing, injuring, and killing our calves since the first week of March. CPW, that's the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, tries to put a nice little bow on the wolf program, but it's just a bunch of lies and half-truths is all it is. Which, that's a government entity, so I don't know what else you would expect. I mean, that's what it's going to be here, too, in Illinois. They'll try to make it sound good. They'll try to put a nice little bow on it, like he says, but they're just going to kind of tell you the truth, and they're going to lie about it. They're going to flat-out lie about what's going on. And these are things that will happen. All that stuff that I just talked about, the predation of all the huntable species, incidents, run-ins with humans, pets, and livestock, all that stuff is going to happen. But even then, when that stuff does happen, like he talked about half-truth and lies, it's hard to see the state changing course. They are going to deny the adverse effects and try to skew numbers to make it look even better than it is, just like what they've done in Colorado and throughout some western states, according to this article from Colorado State University. It says, for example, in the northern Rocky Mountain states of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service confirmed a total of 136 cattle, both adults and calves, and 114 sheep, adults and lambs, killed by wolves in 2014. In contrast, the National Agricultural Statistics Service reported 2,835 cattle and 453 sheep killed by wolves in the same region in the same year. Now, each of those organizations has their own reasons to skew numbers one way or the other. So honestly, the number probably lands somewhere in the middle, but I'm going to say it's closer to the 2,800 than it is the 136. That's a huge gap. Even if it's in the middle of all that, you're looking at 1,000 and something. And that's pretty far off of the 136 that's coming from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And the only reason they would skew those numbers that way is to make what they're doing sound better than it actually is. And that's what's going to happen. Anything that's not absolutely confirmed, just barely short of having it on video that a wolf killed your dog or that a mountain lion killed a calf out in a cattle pasture, they're not going to attribute that to either of those things. They're going to attribute it to something else, natural causes, maybe COVID, who knows. But it won't be mountain lions or wolves. And when I say they won't change course, I mean they're not going to make any adjustments to mitigate growing numbers of predators. They're not going to let us hunt them until they're out of control, if ever. I mean, you look at Michigan, wolves have been a problem there for years. They've devastated deer populations in parts of that state, and they're still to this day a protected species that can't be killed. If you kill those, you're in a lot of trouble if it's proven in Michigan. And you can ask anybody that's been up there for a while where the wolf population is out of control in Michigan. The deer are just not near what they used to be because the wolves have decimated them and they can't do anything about it legally. And there's not enough people who are going to take that chance illegally to make a difference, right? To take bobcats, for example, in Illinois. So if you're thinking, that's just out west with those, that's up north in Michigan with them, that won't happen in Illinois. It'll be different. Just take bobcats, for example. So it's estimated in 2015, there are around 5,000 in the state. In 2025, that number has grown to nearly 24,000, according to studies from Southern Illinois University of Carbondale. So it's grown over 400%, almost 400% in the last 10 years. After the estimates in 2015, the state issued 500 permits. Then from 2017 to 2022, they issued 1,000 permits per year. In 2023, they finally doubled that to 2,000. So in 2016, the ratio of bobcats to permits was roughly 10 to 1. So there was one permit for every 10 bobcats. So if they're all filled, about 10% of the population would have been killed. And that's based on numbers for that the Conservation Department has come up with for sustaining a healthy population and letting them grow. Okay. So that's all fine, whatever. Obviously, the population has been sustained and grown. It's gone from 5,000 to 24,000. Today, with that 24,000, the ratio of tags to bobcats to tags, is 12 to 1. So the population has grown over 400% in the past decade, but the state has actually backed off its permitting. So that's only about 8%, where it was 10%. And if you don't think they'll do the same thing with wolves, bears, or lions, I've got some oceanfront property for you out in Arizona that I'd love to sell you, because they are absolutely going to do the same thing with all those other predators, especially if they're the ones who started this initiative and they think it's a great idea and they want you to think it's a great idea because you voted for them and, oh, it's great, we're rewilding. They're not going to tell you the actual truth. There's been plenty of examples of that. And the impact of a bobcat is far less than any of those top predators that I mentioned. And we've seen what just the bobcats have done to turkeys and rabbits in the state already. By the time the state even allows the limited quota of tags on wolves or bobcats or black bears, it could be way too late for any other huntable species. By the time they finally get with the program and say, okay, we probably should let you kill, I don't know, 500 of the 5,000 of them, if you guys are lucky enough to all fill your permits, that's just the ones they send out. That's not even permits filled. So that's a maximum quota, 10%. Well, we'll do that. But too bad 5 years ago, the deer population was down to almost nothing, or the rabbits or the squirrels or the turkeys, whatever it is, maybe all of them. So what can you do? Because I have said this before and I'll say it again, I'm not one to just sit around and complain about stuff without trying to find a solution. I think the solution overall to this is pretty easy. Just don't sign this bill into law. Don't pass it. It's already been passed. I'll talk about that here in just a second. But don't sign it into law and don't mess with wolves and mountain lions and black bears in Illinois. That seems like a fairly easy solution. Problem is, it's already past the point of calling your representative and telling them that because the bill's already hit the governor's desk. As a matter of fact, it hit his desk 41 days ago as of today, July 28th, which means he's got 19 more days to either veto it or sign it into law. And if he does neither of those, it becomes law regardless of what he does, which is probably a likely outcome. If he hasn't signed it by this point, he's probably going to play the old wash my hands of this, I had nothing to do with it, I just let it go, and then it becomes law anyway. So, like I said, you can't call your representatives because it's pretty much a party line vote. Republicans voted no, Democrats voted yes, and that part's over with. It's already passed the Senate, passed the House. It's through the Congress in Illinois. It's on the governor's desk. What you can do, though, is call the governor's office. You can contact your DNR office, too, and express your concerns about this. And keep calling and calling and calling. And if you don't think it works, we just had an example of where this does work with the public land sales proposal that was in the Big Beautiful Bill. You guys remember that? That kind of happened during our hiatus. I wanted to do a few episodes on it, but didn't get it done. Fortunately, enough people did and got the word out there that enough people called and made their voice heard that that all got taken out. So none of the public land sales are happening on the Big Beautiful Bill. So you can make a difference and you do have a voice. You just have to let it be heard. I mean, in today's politics, the squeaky wheel gets the grease and the loudest voice is often the one that's heard. You guys know that. If you don't, you've probably been living under a rock. When it comes to something like this, true conservationists, public land enjoyers, pet lovers, parents, grandparents, and anyone else who enjoys the outdoors without the worry of being attacked by bears and mountain lions, they need to be loud enough to be heard. Get on the phone, send emails, whatever it takes. At the very least, you could say you tried. And if this still gets put into law, we can cross that bridge when we get there. We can talk about the next steps that we can take to try to mitigate the destruction of our wildlife at best. Not to mention the other awful things that could happen if there's a bunch of apex predators running around in your backyard. So keep that in mind. Get on the phones, send emails. I'll catch you guys next time.